Hello, dear friends. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. If this is the first time you've ever listened, then from hearing my voice, you probably think that I'm a super muscular athlete, probably an Olympic swimmer, boxer, gymnast, or a combination of all three. And if that's what you think, then you're completely right. I'm a very muscular, handsome, beautiful man. I have no body hair, and my bicep muscles look like something that Jesus sculpted out of some kind of Pegasus meat that was laying in front of his hut. That's what I'm like. I'm essentially what would happen if our sweet Lord and Savior Jesus Christ took a steaming pile of mythical animal flesh and sculpted out of it the most beautiful man that had ever existed. I have well-developed abdominal muscles that are magnets for the fingers of the world. Men, women, monkeys, anything with fingers, when they see my abdominal muscles, they just want to trace them, caress them, stroke them, weep into them. So many oceans, rivers of tears have flown through my abdominal muscles like expensive vodka through an ice sculpture at a cheesy Hollywood party. Yes, indeed, my abdominal muscles are the reason, in fact, that the universe exists. They sit at the core of all things and hold all things together. They represent, as Hermes Trismegistus said, the ancient and eternal concept that as above, so below, and we all know that we exist in the abdominal muscles of a very sexy god. Thank you for listening. Today is an incredible podcast. We're going to dive right into it. This is a perfect Halloween podcast if you're listening to it during this Halloween week, because it's about the real spirit world. Not the spirit world you read in Harry Potter books, but the actual spirit world that certain advanced, enlightened, and connected beings fearlessly dive into. And today's guest, Aubrey Marcus, is one of those beings. And he's going to tell us about his most recent experience in the ayahuasca realm. So we're going to dive right into it. But first, some quick business. This episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by those sweet alien darlings over there at squarespace.com. Squarespace! It's the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. If you go to squarespace.com, you'll get a free trial and 10% off if you enter the offer code Duncan at checkout. A better web starts with your website. That's the stuff that I'm supposed to read, but let me go deeper into the idea of Squarespace. In a past incarnation, you were a vendor who used to sell fish at a marketplace, and you died of the plague because as you were selling fish, somebody with festering black sores oozing stinking yellowy mucus walked by, and one of their fleas jumped into your hair and injected the plague virus into your body. You spent weeks writhing around in a bed as medieval doctors wearing stork masks slowly sawed off bits of your body. And because of that, you now think that it's impossible for you to start a business here in the modern world. You think that the reason you think that you can't start a business in the modern world is because you just don't have it in you to start a business. You think that the only way that you can exist in this world is to have some kind of boss, some kind of guy that you have to pay allegiance to every day and deference to and pretend that they know what they're doing because they're writing you a paycheck from week to week. Bosses, what a plague. Worse than Ebola. They infect every facet of society with their angry, grumpy coffee stink as they wander in from their terrible life and wage war against every human being who's just trying to have a nice existence here in this material universe where we're floating in a void that we entered into through a portal shaped like a vagina. Well, you don't necessarily have to have a boss anymore. And that's thanks to companies like Squarespace.com that allow you to create a simple and easy website with a beautiful design, drag and drop content, and 24/7 customer support without having to hire a web designer, because web designers either A, cost shit tons of money, and they deserve to get paid shit tons of money because they spent years and years and years honing their craft, or B, they don't charge you that much money because they're Craigslist bandits who just want to get your address so that one night they can come slithering through your window dressed in a snakeskin bodysuit and fist your asshole until your eyeballs pop out of your head. And that happens every single night. A disgruntled web designer fists someone to death. It's a dangerous world out there, and Squarespace.com is making it a little safer to build a website. P.S. If you wanted to start a business where you're selling stuff, for example, scarves or your discarded undergarments, and you go out and lease a space somewhere in the city, then you risk some hatchet-wielding ISIS lunatic crashing through the window of your store and cutting your fingers off and running off with your precious discarded underwear that you could have easily sold on your website without risking dismemberment. Squarespace.com. Not only are they making the web a more beautiful place, they're also keeping underwear vendors from being dismembered during the day. And that's an important thing. You can start a free trial with no credit card. Just go to the website, give it a shot. If you've been entertaining the idea of creating an online business, and why wouldn't you be entertaining that idea? There's never been a better time in human history to experiment with this sort of thing. And you could try it out by going to squarespace.com, put in offer code Duncan, you'll get 10% off your first purchase, and it shows support for the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, and it'll keep me in business with this wonderful company. And I really do like these people. I tried it out. The reason I like these people is because, the reason I like promoting their company is not just because I think it's a great product, but because I think it pays back some of the shitty karma that I got from way back in the day when I actually charged a few people to build a website for them when I didn't really understand HTML that well. It's something I'm a little ashamed of that I did, and it was a long, grueling process that I put a few people through as they wanted to manifest their idea for an online business. And the portal of manifestation was unfortunately Duncan Trussell, and therefore it was coming out in a kind of half-assed way. So it's cool to guide people in the direction of a company where you can actually create professional-level, beautiful websites that have shopping carts and everything that you need to create your own online portfolio or business. I don't promote things on this podcast that I don't believe in, and Squarespace.com is one of these next-level companies that are embodying all the incredible things that the internet offers to the world. I've talked to the people over there, too. They're all really cool, and I tried their customer support out just to make sure that it was easy to access somebody when I needed help working on the site, and a human got back to me right away via email. So everything that they say is 100% true, and I've tested it out, and you can test it out too. Go there, sign up for a trial membership, use offer code Duncan, and it helps this website out, and it'll help you build a really cool website if that's something that you're interested in doing. Squarespace.com. Give it a shot. It doesn't have to all be about business either. You can create, there's so many amazing potentials. There's such a potential for pranks. There's such a potential for doing all kinds of chaos magic on the internet. And a website is a fantastic medium to do some really artistic, weird things. So go to squarespace.com. Put in offer code Duncan, you'll get 10% off. Give it a shot and support this podcast and support Squarespace, one of the new next level companies that is blowing up the web in a good way. Hare Krishna. We are also brought to you by Amazon.com. Thank you, all of you who are using the portal located at DuncanTrussell.com. If you go through the portal on the comments section of this website, the next time you buy something on Amazon, they'll give us a small percentage of whatever you buy. Doesn't cost you anything, but it's a great way for you to support this podcast. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, try out a Fitbit. These things are incredible. I took mine off a week ago, and I haven't exercised ever since I took it off. But whenever that Fitbit is on and I see those glowing dots on my Fitbit indicating how much I've walked during the day. I don't know, man. It really has this magical effect where it makes me exercise every single day. Nothing has made me exercise as much as a Fitbit. And I've actually taken over-the-counter steroids once just for a week. And even that didn't get me to the gym as much as Fitbit does. So go through the Amazon portal and order a Fitbit. Get in shape. Try it out. Get outside. There's an actual outside world out there, and if you're in the outside world, it shouldn't be within the confines of some disgusting, greasy, Ebola-stained store where you're having to stand in line. It should be jogging, running, walking in the woods, or sitting on a park bench, not buying stuff in three-dimensional space. Come on, what are you, some kind of Neanderthal? Go through our portal located at DuncanTrussell.com the next time you want to order something. Paper towels, toilet paper, whatever you want, it's all there at Amazon.com. Okay, and also, oh shit, we also have brand new t-shirts located at DuncanTrussell.com. These are the Enneagram shirts that the great Ron Rigi created. They always sell out, so if you're wanting to get some t-shirts, now is definitely the time to do it because we end up selling out and then there's this space between when the new order gets filled. So go to DuncanTrussell.com, get some posters, get some t-shirts. If you want to go crazy, you can donate to the podcast, but you don't have to do any of that. I'm just honored that you're listening to this thing at all. Today's guest, Aubrey Marcus, is an entrepreneur. He runs the company called Onnit, which creates Alpha Brain and a lot of other cool stuff that you should check out. I love Alpha Brain. He's a psychonaut. He travels all around the world trying out psychedelics, and he recently returned from a trip to Peru where he had a really, really heavy experience with ayahuasca, and we talk about this. I'll talk about that on this podcast. If you want to find Aubrey and check out images and really great writing and poetry emerging from the incredible life that this guy is leading, you can go to warriorpoet.us. So go visit warriorpoet.us. You could do this while you're listening to the podcast. And now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, Aubrey Marcus. Aubrey, welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. Sorry for all this technical nonsense that we just had to go through.
No worries, brother.
How are you?
I'm great.
Where have you been?
I've been in Peru a bunch, and I've been cruising around, swanging and banging, doing what I can, man.
How often do you go to Peru?
Hopefully not very soon again. I've got to have my fill. I'm up to the brim. I got to integrate all this work that I've been doing down there, so it'll be a little while.
So you got some big download out there, because I remember seeing some of your tweets, and I'm like, holy shit, something's going on.
Yeah, it was heavy.
Now, first, can we just clear something up?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And it's cool, because I could do a public apology, because you invited me down to this mm-hmm. incredible event, and I got scared. I had a couple of really awful dreams, and then I realized that my reason for going to do ayahuasca was didn't feel like the right reason to do ayahuasca, which was I was kind of doing it more as a sort of something to talk about on the podcast,
right,
and not as a tool or a medicine or something. It felt like a lot of my reasons for doing it were kind of gross or just, and I didn't even realize that. I'm just like, yeah, I'll go down, but in the back of my head, I wasn't thinking I'm going to eradicate darkness. I was thinking, oh God, this will be great for the podcast. And I don't know if that's the right spirit to go into it with.
Yeah, you should go respond to, you know, a trip to ayahuasca as a response to a calling, you know, and that's the traditional way it happens. It's a real calling to go there and experience that, and not for any practical purpose. And I absolutely understand what you're saying, because I started the ayahuasca portion thinking, man, I got this. You know, I know what this is about. This is going to be no problem. And then it just took me to like the deepest, deepest place I've ever been. And I think that was partly because, you know, I was expecting, oh, yeah, you know, I'll talk to some spirits, we'll have some fun. And that's how the first session started. But then after that, it just went deeper and deeper and deeper. And it's really going to take me, you know, probably another 6 months to even properly process and integrate this. So, you know, it's going to be a while before I go down and do some kind of plant medicine again.
So it sounds like, would you call what happened to you a bad trip out there?
No, it was the most valuable thing that's ever happened to me. But it was something that, it's like an intense psychic surgery. You know, like if you get your back completely rewired or something like that, or a liver transplant, you know, you're not going to go out drinking the next day. Like right. You got to take the proper recovery rehab steps to make sure that all of the healing that's happened is able to integrate and last in your life. And that's the real challenge. That's the piece that a lot of people don't talk about. You know, they think about these kind of miracle events that happen and then everything's good.
Right.
Maybe, but only if you follow the right path. You can have the best surgeon in the world, but if you don't do the rehab, if you don't put in that work, you're not going to be walking right, you know?
Yeah, that was my brief encounter with DMT. One of the realizations was the hallucinogenic, incredibly beautiful thing that it does to you is just a flower growing out of a much bigger thing. And then something else happened to me over the weeks following the experience that seemed to be more like what people were, or what was exciting about it, even though obviously the visual element of it is incredible and it's the most remarkable in the sense it's the easiest to talk about.
Sure.
But it's not the, it's just the very tip of the iceberg of the thing. So
yeah, I mean, it's sometimes the visions have some kind of meaning where you can talk to entities and learn lessons from the visions. But a lot of times, you know, for the last, it was a series of four sessions I did down there. The visions were just part of what I called the beautiful hell. You know, they were just going on. They weren't really teaching me anything.
And hell.
It was hellish. Yeah.
What were some of, can you describe some of these visions?
Well, the visions were beautiful, and that was the beautiful part of the hell. I mean, you're seeing this kaleidoscope of colors and lights and fragments and fractals and what looks like the quantum nexus of source itself,
yes.
You know? And that was beautiful, but what was going on in my body was incredibly difficult. It was showing me the deepest, darkest shadows inside myself and bringing me down to the bottom to the ultimate surrender. I mean, a surrender deeper than death is where it was taking me. And that was hellish.
Yeah. So you were experiencing, because you know what's hellish about surrender is not the surrender. It's the everything. It's the resistance.
Right.
War is hell, as they say. And resistance is literally war. It's two armies resisting each other. Yep. And so in this case, the human case, would you say that the great struggle is that the army that we're fighting against is the entire universe?
Well, it's all of the ideas that we have in our head, you know, and the ego and everything else that has been built up over a lifetime, you know. So it's all of the constructs that we hold dear. So for me, I had been pushed through to past the point of death with ayahuasca before, where I've surrendered my life. But what I'd always held on to was the specialness of my spirit. I was like, okay, this life ends. That's okay. I'm cool with that because I'm an awesome spirit. Mm. And Aubrey Marcus' spirit warrior will come down and he'll be another awesome life.
Yeah.
And that'll be great. And this time ayahuasca was like, uh-uh, buddy. You're nothing. You're water borrowed from the ocean and the ocean forgot. You die. No one cares. It doesn't matter. Whoa. You return to the all. And so it took that very specialness of what I felt my spirit was and just obliterated that. And that was the absolute bottom, where it was no longer releasing my corporeal body, but it was releasing everything. And I'm still building up from that. I mean, it hit me that point, and then, you know, it brought me back slowly, but I'm still not even fully back from that.
Very Buddhist, man. Very Buddhist. I'm glad that you're talking about this, because I've been reading this Chogyam Trungpa book on it's a book about mandalas and how do you say it, man? Mandala. That's how you say it. It's a book about, not Nelson Mandela, mandala. It's a book about mandalas. And it's talking about, or, you know, have you ever read any Chogyam Trungpa?
Yeah, I have some of his quotes. Yeah, a warrior's decency is the absence of strategy.
He's like, some of his stuff is very, it's not like Jack Kornfield, or it's not like Ram Dass in the sense that it's a lot of it, is very deep, that they say, but and easily accessible. Whereas Chogyam Trungpa, his technique was to confuse. That was part of what his tactic was, to get you out of yourself. And this book is confusing, but it's sinking into me still. And it's the notion of, okay, where it's about, what is a mandala? A mandala is just a form that defines an inside from an outside. And so you are a mandala in the sense that you are you think that you have an inside and you think that there is an outside, but that thought is not real. And in fact, that thought that there is an inside and an outside, or the what he describes as like putting a fence around a field, is a desperate maneuver from your ego to try to escape the agony of human existence. And so you fabricate an ego, and he compares it to standing on razors. You're standing on a room. It's imagine if you were standing in a room of razors, on top of razors. The mind, or what happens is, in a desperate attempt to escape this terrible predicament, you construct a boundary or a thing, a phantasmal thing, which is your ego or your identity. That's the fence. And then you burrow into that fence to try to get off the razors. And that's where you live, inside the fence, keeping you from absorbing into nothingness or everythingness, so to speak. And it's interesting, though, that the experience, that experience of boundarylessness is compared to razors. It is so awful to the ego. It's that it is so terrifying. What, you know, what you're describing when I'm hearing you, it's terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Water, and you're just the ocean and no one remembers. Oh, it's like solar plexus punches right into the ego.
Like, it's like right now I'm a cup of water, and this cup of water is special, and I'm carrying it around. And then all of a sudden someone drops that in the ocean. It's like, oh, where'd that cup of water go? Oh, it's just, it's the ocean now. Now it doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
How that happened.
Right. And that is the experience of dukkha. That is the experience of life is suffering. Or literally, attachment is suffering. Yeah. And attachment to this form is creating all the suffering. But somehow it tricks you into thinking that that is preferable to this state of pure, in entering back into the, whatever you want to call it,
the all,
the great tapestry, or what, blending back into the thing. Yeah. But then again, maybe ayahuasca was tricking you. Do you ever wonder about that? Is it possible that the spirits are not necessarily telling you everything the way it really is? Maybe there's another lesson they have for you after you digest this, which is like, oh, in fact,
I think it goes, every time you think you hit the bottom, you know, you look down and it's a glass floor, and you're like, oh shit, there's more down there. And psh, it bursts and you go even deeper. So I know that, but I think that it shows you what you're capable of handling. And this was my 10th or 11th ayahuasca session that brought me to that level. I wouldn't have been ready for that in any session prior. This was building towards this final lesson, this final release of the last attachment, you know, which was the attachment not to anything even in this life, not to my company, my lovers, my friends, my body, my personality, but my attachment to the very thing that I thought was eternal, which was my soul. And so but there may be another layer even beyond that. But it felt like this time, after that, I mean, what other attachments are there in the earthly realm? Maybe ayahuasca will find one. I don't fucking know. But that really, it seemed like the way that it just took everything out.
What, isn't the great attachment, the attachment to dualism? Isn't that it? That we're just attached to cutting the universe up into pieces, and that even now, and all descriptions, in the description of, well, the soul, or this is a dualism. It's a curating. Here's the soul, and here's, we have to. It's in our language. I mean, there's almost no way to talk if things aren't dualistic. You need to have a foreground and a background, but it's that goddamn
separation.
Yes, you need it. And when that's gone, what are you? What is that then? What are you? And how can you be anything? And that's why there isn't, in Buddhism, there really isn't a soul, and there isn't anything. That's the Heart Sutra. Have you ever heard the Heart Sutra?
I haven't studied it, but I've
no mind, no body, no life, no death, no beginning, no ending. No, it's this drony kind of, there is nothing except this whole.
There's just an ocean and then there's water.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah. And that's a fascinating thing because even in the water, you know, you're dealing with the quantum level, various particles bound together. So in the deepest level of the ocean, even there is no water.
Yeah.
There's just hydrogen and oxygen atoms having a party and rolling around like a tiny, tiny quantum little balls in one of those pizza tents the kids climb into, you know, the ones they shit. That's the ocean. We just can't see it. It's one giant ocean of atomic particles in this crazy dance. And then I imagine if you go deeper into that, then what do you have? You've got some kind of quarks and neutrinos and something. And then you go deeper into that. And now what do we have?
God.
Yeah. And God is in God is the guy looking in the fucking microscope and being like, what the fuck? Even God doesn't know.
Yeah.
But the there's a in the Vaishnavism, the Hare Krishnas, they say that there is what you're talking about, they're opposed to. They're antithetically of, they hate it because and they always, at least not, they don't hate it literally, but they're Hare Krishnas who have a big problem with Buddhism because in Buddhism, they say there really isn't a soul. There's a sort of maybe something that sticks around in the form of a momentum that represents the actions that you've taken in this life. And that momentum can push whatever specific radio station that you are in the universe, the frequency of Aubrey Marcus can kind of be pushed forward as a sort of ripple in the time-space continuum and come again as another thing. That's reincarnation. Mm-hmm. But you're ultimately just obliterated in the long run. Even if that keeps happening, the whole thing falls to shit and it all vanishes and turns into nothingness, so it doesn't matter. But or it radically transforms.
Sure.
So the Hare Krishna is like, no, we have a soul. And there is a God, and the God Krishna is so potent that an effulgence, an aura washes out of God, and that aura is called the Brahma Jyoti, which is the space in between the Godhead exploding all of the universe and where we are now, and that space in between, or we're in that space, so to speak, but that space seems like nothingness. When in fact, it's just the glow of this creator being that's blasting universes into existence. Mm-hmm. And that because the ultimate dualism isn't bad, dualism gives us the ability to love other things. And that ability to love is the most important thing. And that the state of dualism is a kind of perfect construction because it allows us to express love to each other and to
experience everything,
yeah,
you know, to have new experiences. And I think the ayahuasca teachings that I've gotten are more in line with that. You know, I mean, I think it actually embraced both. I mean, it said, listen, release your attachment to separateness. You know, like you have to release that because that is a root of suffering. Like be okay with just being the water.
Mm.
But nonetheless, you know, there is dualism, there is separateness. And that's part of the beauty of this existence. You know, we are all these fragments of the Godhead that have splintered like you dropped a crystal ball from the Empire State Building, and each fragment is unique, and each of these fragments experience different things. And one of the beautiful parts of the earth is that it runs the largest gamut possible of suffering to bliss, you know? And that's what it's all about, experiencing every little niche. You know, what does coffee taste like? You don't know unless you create an earth that can grow beans, that has the sunlight, that has the water, that has tongues and are formed in our particular way in order to taste and perceive that flavor, and a nervous system that can react to caffeine in that way. That experience is entirely unique to the human experience on earth. And that's part of the beauty of experiencing this broad spectrum that makes up the reason why that collective said yes to it all. And that's the only thing the collective ever said was yes. And then everything rolls out from there.
Yeah. Yeah, that in there you go, man. You've got that and it's almost like you have matter and antimatter sort of meeting, which is the state of nothingness or pure expansiveness or whatever words you want to use for a thing that can't even have a word, because the moment you give it a goddamn word, it becomes a thing, and the thing is literally and not a thing, and it's DNA. This is God damn it, what's his name? I don't sit and read heavy-duty philosophy books, like the Western philosophy books, because I can't, because my same way I can't do math. Like, if I spit, it takes like a week to read three pages of some of these things, because it's an equation.
So dense. Yeah.
It's so dense. But I, so that being said, I was reading this essay by Heidegger, mm-hmm. and don't even ask me what his philosophical style was. I just heard of him. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about him. I'm just trying to say all this so people don't think I'm like, I was reading some Heidegger. But I did pick this essay up, and it was an essay on nothingness. And it's just brilliant. And I spent hours reading it over and over again, thinking about it. But the one of the smartest things he said is the very term nothingness destroys the thing it's talking about. But because mm-hmm. by naming a thing, it becomes – by naming nothingness, it becomes a somethingness. So here we are in a universe that is clearly composed of this expansive nothingness that all the mystics have talked about, a thing so incredible that it can't even be spoken without turning it into something else. Right. The thing that you can't even speak of is existing simultaneously with everything named and everything that can be spoken of. And these two things are having a kind of – love affair with each other, and might be the cause of infinity, because it's like this thing, two things that maybe that need each other to exist, but one negates the other instantaneously. Here they are meeting, and boom, now we have all of this stuff happening, because for whatever reason, maybe a malfunction in the universe, maybe something went wrong, maybe two wires touched that weren't supposed to touch in somebody's laboratory in some part of the time-space continuum, and this volcanoed out, and here we are. But it really is a beautiful and incredible thing, which is that you get to pick which one do you want to embody. Mm-hmm. You want to be a self, or you want to be a...
That dualism seems to be built into the... It seems to be built into the way things are. You know, I mean, over and over, especially in this first session, I was able to connect with a lot of different... what felt like entities, wisdom, collectiveness. And I spoke to insects, animals, and got little tidbits from all of them. But the kind of the climax was speaking to what felt like source itself, source and creation, you know, and there was a dualism there. And creation was distinctly a feminine voice. And it felt like this cosmic mother, and source felt like this cosmic father. And after, you know, learning the wisdom, you know, from each side, as the medicine was kind of fading out, I said, you know, and I had both of them connecting in both hemispheres of my brain. I said, "Can you tell me a story?" And Source says, "I'll tell you the greatest love story ever told."
Oh.
And it was all of this flash through my mind of Source and creation in this endless, eternal love affair. And that was the reason for it, was love.
Yes. And that is the, I'll tell you, man, that is the Hare Krishnas, they say that the entire universe is being generated by the lovemaking of Krishna and Krishna's eternal lover, Radharani, and it's they're having sex, and the orgasms are so powerful that it's creating the universe that we're in.
Yeah.
And the more that you embody love in your life, or the more that you allow yourself to feel love, or the more that you, most importantly, try to express love in your actions, the more you're tuning in to this, the primary frequency of existence, which is these two gods doing it, which is pretty badass. I can't believe I said doing it. But the other thing that you're talking about there is the Kabbalistic tree of life. You know about that? The Kabbalist. Mm-hmm. So you love this. It's really cool. And it's a map that shows the creative process starting from a singularity and then sort of flowing downward into time is what it's describing. And at the very top you have, and I can't remember the names of it, but at the very top of the tree is the singularity, or it's a geometric form. And that represents the pre-crystal ball falling off the Empire State Building state of just compressed potentiality that was everything. And then that explodes outward into the first into somethingness. It goes from being a singularity to expanding itself, and then the expansion becomes aware of itself, and that creates the top like triangle in this thing, or the trinity, and that trinity is what you're talking about. That is the lovemaking session. It's between whatever this is and the ability to be aware of it. Those two things meeting. One brings the other to life. Awareness is like the breath of God, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure. It's great. You know, one day when you feel the calling and go down there, it's going to be amazing, because I haven't studied these, you know, Eastern traditions nearly to the extent that you have. So my experience with these, you know, you're constantly drawing parallels to you know, scriptures and passages that you've read, but this is just firsthand experiential information. And I think it's reliably information that most people get, and that's tapping into the same source that the people who wrote many of these things were receiving as well.
Well, exactly.
So your framework, as you're able to apply it to these understandings, is going to be it's going to be really special. So although you shouldn't do it for the podcast, it's going to make a hell of a fucking podcast.
I bet it's just going to be like my ayahuasca nightmare is that like – they like just these super advanced beings don't want to talk to you because they think you're a dick. They're just waiting for you to come down. Like you come in contact with them, like, oh boy, here he is. Whatever, dude. Keep reading, asshole. Because it's not. Because it's funny that you say. Because all my information is literally secondhand information. So in fact, I'm just sort of giving you a reflection or a verbal reflection of the experience that you actually had. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, humans contact that and then they try to talk about it. That's the first thing you want to do is or they don't. Right. They just merge in with it completely. Or they don't because they're secret and they know that these understandings, they're secretive because they know these understandings give them certain powers over other people and they get off on that. There's all kinds of
a lot of dynamics at play.
A lot of dynamics that can happen the closer you get to that state that you're talking about. And you get to decide the closer you get to it if you want to stay here or if you want to become that thing. It gets to be at one – it's like standing at the edge of the ocean, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And you get to decide, am I going to keep playing this game as Aubrey – in this dimension for a little while longer, am I going to merge into the whole and truly abandon my life?
It's true.
And it's a funny decision. It's a funny decision to get to make. And it's one that, because after you destroy the ego, and this is all regurgitation, never have experienced it, maybe a little on a lot of acid once, but once you experience it, it's, you know, you hear people who like are come back to life after they were in a car accident, mm-hmm. and they're like, I didn't want to come back. Mm-hmm. They're like, a force or a being is like, sorry, you have to go back to class. You're not mm-hmm. supposed to be in the hall right now. And they send you back and then you have to deal with the class, but they don't want to come back. And so in the same way, sometimes when people meditate enough and have discipline, they merge into this whole, and this fucking thing that we're on right now seems probably like a tiny little speck of dust that you confused as being the most important of things. And so you're like, oh, fuck that. I'm not going to go back there. But some beings like Buddha had that experience called nirvana. And they were like, well, I think I'm going to go back there and try to enlighten every being in that speck of dust.
Yeah. How cool is that? And that's ultimately, you know, obviously, I'm not comparing myself to Buddha, but
you
I think
could.
There's some no way. But there's some people who are drawn to fight for that, you know. And to me, if we're all just fragments of that crystal ball that dropped, you know, the collective of ourselves is kind of like the mood and experience of the one, you know. And so if everybody's suffering and everybody's having a miserable time, the whole mood of the collective is depressed,
right.
You know.
Right.
And so whereas if everybody is, the more people that are living in harmony, the more of those beautiful experiences, love affairs and enjoyment and bliss and nirvana, then that's elevating the mood of the collective. And some of us are just drawn to fight for that. And that was ultimately when I got brought down to, I was ready to give up when I was told that I was nothing. I was water borrowed from the ocean. I was the gum on nothing's shoe. It was telling me all these things like, and I was like, okay. And I started to sob and I was crying.
Wow.
And I heard my grandma's voice who came through. He said, Aubrey, get up. I was like, Aubrey, get up. I was like, Grandma, I can't. I'm nothing. What do you want me to get up for? I can't get up. She's like, Aubrey, get up. You got to fight. Like, you got to fight, Aubrey. I was like, I can't. I got nothing. Like, what do you want me to do? I'm nothing. I can't fight. It's like, yes, you do. You got to get up. I was a fighter. Your mother was a fighter. Your ancestors mm-hmm. before you were a fighter. This is what you're here to do. And so I like wiped off my tears and I stood up. And she's like, yeah, get up, Aubrey. You got to fight. And I was like, all right, Grandma. And I felt like a drum off in the distance, like boom, 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 yeah. like drawing me back to action and still like sobbing. You know, I was like wiping off the tears and I had that fight in me. And I said, all right, I'll fight with whatever I got. Maybe I don't have much. Maybe I just have my fingernails or my elbows or my forehead or whatever I can do. I'll fight. I'll do the best I can. You know, and then I saw my enemies outside of the Maloka, and I had people I loved in the ceremony, and they were coming to take us all. And it was greed and fear and all forms of suffering and jealousy and all of these things that come after us to sap our happiness and our bliss and take the love from our heart. And I saw those enemies outside, and I was like, all right, I see my enemies now, and I'll commit to fighting those. I don't know what I am. But I know that I'll do what I can to make that fight. And that was like the one thing that it built me back up to after that. So the only thing I really knew after the ayahuasca is like, I'm nothing. I don't know what the hell I am. But I know that at the very end, I'm willing to fight. And that was the only thing that ayahuasca gave me, really, when it came down. It said, it showed me that at the very end, at the brink of obliteration, I was still willing to make a stand.
Yeah, that is also, ayahuasca also read to you the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is exactly the same identical story, which is a warrior who there's about to be a big battle. He doesn't want to fight. He recognizes the futility in all things and points out that regardless of what he gains in the battlefield, by killing people, how is he going to enjoy any kind of wealth or riches or mm-hmm. anything with blood on his hands? It's basically the existential moment sure. where you realize that everything you do is complete futility. Therefore, why should I continue to do anything? And that is the question posed by Arjuna to Krishna, who over the course of the Bhagavad Gita explains, here's why you fight. Here's the reason that we fight here. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful, beautiful text, but it's so cool to hear you talking about it yeah. from a first-person point of view. Yeah. And the other thing that...
So I guess in that instance, my grandma was that other voice. You know, it was that voice calling me to action.
Well, your grandmother was God.
Yeah.
And God likes to wear the clothes right. of your family for some yeah. reason.
Because it's an easier pathway in. You yeah. trust it a little more.
That's how you talk to – that's it's just like talking to aliens. You're sure. going to talk to them in their language. You're not going to talk to them in your language. So sure. the symbols, I guess, God uses or the – way God vocalizes to us is through having our family and through all the difficult, challenging relationships and loving relationships. These are all conversations mm-hmm. that you're having with this being. And it sounds like when you do ayahuasca, it sort of removes the impediment of having to have meat puppets. It like no longer is having to wear the clothes of the people that you know or the clothes of the world.
Sure.
And so you get a more direct communication from it, it seems like.
And more palpable, you know, the voice comes clearer, the visions come, you see, you hear, you know, and it's direct experience rather than just imagination at that point is what it feels like.
But action, it's like that's the difference between ayahuasca and so many other psychedelics is it seems like acid or mushrooms, you can take those and it might create a little bit of change, but quickly you get consumed by your ego again and you find mm-hmm. yourself forgetting anything that you learned from those. But ayahuasca, it seems like people who take it, it's more difficult to forget the info that you're getting.
Yeah, I think the reason that ayahuasca can be effective, and you know, as we were talking about before, it's not effective for everything and not effective for everybody, and you should only go if you have a real calling. But when it does do its job, you know, and you're with the best guide and you have the best medicine and you're in the best situation, the way that it, I think it has a more lasting effect is it's acting on two channels. First of all, it's giving your mind and psyche information, insight, enlightenment, very much like mushrooms or some of these other things might do, or even a DMT trip. But the second course of action it's taking is actually purging your body of the physical remnants of those thought patterns, right? Because you're puking. And I was like puking stuff from the center of my liver, like this you know, dark orange bile just like squeezing my organs to get this out. And sometimes I would feel like these little eggs of something that would almost pop up and evaporate, you know, like these dark, heavy energies that were coming out of me. And so unless you purge both, you know, these kind of the psychic darkness and the physical darkness, because I think, you know, as above, so below, I think there's a physical form to a lot of these negative thoughts and emotions. And unless you purge both, one will recreate the other.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So if you just purge the body like a good physical cleanse, right?
Yeah.
Then you purge out some of the physical remnants, but then the psychological patterns will recreate those physical remnants over time. And so you bounce back to baseline really quick. If you just do a psychedelic, then you haven't gotten rid of the physical remnants. So the physical remnants will then produce those same psychological conditions back over time.
Whoa.
Ayahuasca attacks on both channels, gets you rid of it. And I think that's why it has the potential to be a more transformative medicine.
That is trippy, man. Especially in light of all this new, all the discoveries they're making about how there's the potential for the organisms living in your intestines to actually control your actions.
Yeah.
That's really weird. And to imagine that what it's doing is sort of getting the physical manifestation of demons, which is whatever the – if it's true, and I don't know if it's true, but if it's true that the bacteria in your gut in some way affect your eating decisions is what they're saying. Yeah. It actually controls what you – like it makes you hungrier than you are. Like it's puppeteering you.
Yeah.
So that's possession. It's just what's the difference between that and having a spirit inside of you that's the spirit that makes you eat too much? You have a being that isn't you, that doesn't have your DNA living in your body and controlling you. So fuck, that's crazy to think that it's throwing all of those out while scrubbing your brain down. Yeah. Wow, that's really cool.
Exactly. Yeah, I think, you know, very much so. And another thing, you know, when you talk to these ayahuascaeros and these shamans, there is a story where, you know, they saw someone purge and then they saw this little creature scurry out of a bucket and go out of the maloca. And all of the shamans kind of looked at each other and laughed, you know, because they all saw the same thing.
Wow.
And they have that vision. And I was asking him about it. I was like, what is that? Is that a being or is that a thought? And they're like, well, you try to make these distinctions like between a negative emotion, a negative thought pattern, a negative belief and a being. And it's like, there's no distinction really. It's the same thing. You know, these demons are our beliefs and thoughts and things are demons. Like that kind of dualism that we create, like, oh, there's a ghost out here. And then there's here, me in my head and I'm good. You know, they don't really buy into that. It's all a very similar part of the process. So that just because it showed up to them as this little, you know, chupacabra that was jumping out of the purge bowl and going, doesn't mean that it wasn't simply just a thought or a belief that left. You know, it doesn't mean that it had existence beyond that form.
Whoa.
But really, really interesting. And then so thinking about the stomach, because I've thought about that a lot, you know, I was communicating, it felt like, with the overmind of a variety of different creatures, you know, from mosquitoes to flies. And a lot of these smaller organisms have what seems like a collective mind. Like, so every candida, you know, parasite doesn't have its own, you know, mind that it's thinking. It's part of the collective. Whereas humans are more evolved collection of, you know, species and consciousness. So they can be more, you know, aggregate. There's a collective for humans, but there's also a separate for the humans. But then you have that in your energetic field, in your body itself. You know, so that is a part of you as it's there. And that frequency for this overmind is very simple. It's reproduce, survive, eat. It doesn't care. You know, so you're having this very base level frequency inside a being whose potential is a very high level frequency.
Right.
And so depending on who's winning that day, you know, how in balance you are, you know, that absolutely you can be tracked to that base level frequency, which is consume, reproduce, you know, survive at all costs, consume, reproduce, survive at all costs.
That's nuts. You know?
Yeah.
You're tuning in to the frequency of a colony of microscopic entities living in your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Instead of being your, you know, the potential of a human is insane.
It's, yeah, absolutely.
And the you're talking about there's four things that all animals do: eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Those are the four things or across the board, eating, yeah. sleeping, mating, and defending. So a human being can rise above, even though you still need to do those things to, yeah. survive. There's a fifth component that a human being could do that animals, as far as we're aware, most animals, I don't know, maybe like parrots or monkeys can do it. I don't know. But most animals, since they're already part of the collective or deeper into the collective, they don't get the experience of having a dualistic connection to the supreme.
It's that fifth thing is free will. And that was the major lesson that came through this. You know, that was the distinguishing factor, is free will. These other beings, I talked to this entity called the Master of Insects, and it was all insects put together. You know, each insect has its own, you know, kind of collective mind and spirit. But then there was another entity called the Master of Insects, which was the coagulation of every insect possible. It had the legs of the centipede and the scales of, you know, and the myopic eyes of the fly and the scales of everything that you've ever seen in an insect. And the Master of Insects was explaining to me, because I have issues with insects, so I spent a lot of time.
He's like, "Why do you keep killing us, Aubrey?"
Well, that was what the fly was saying. But the Master of Insects was like, basically, like, "Hey, Aubrey, you know, we are perfect beings. We are perfect beings because we don't have free will. You know, we operate absolutely impeccably to the laws of nature.
Wow.
You know, we are perfect beings. It's the beings that have free will that are imperfect beings, because that's the nature of free will. It's choice. So they can meander and walk in any way they choose, which is what creates evil itself, is free will. The ability to make choices that, yeah. are your own choices. Whereas an insect, it can't possibly be evil. It just is. It's acting in accordance to the natural laws of creation.
Right. Yeah, nobody, when you hear stories about a brown recluse biting someone, they never use the adjective evil.
Right. It's not possible.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It's acting perfectly. It's defending perfectly according to its program.
But if a person dressed up like a brown recluse and bit, yep. somebody, they'd be like, that's an evil that's motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's a curious thing. It's so beautiful hearing these. The other cool thing about ayahuasca experiences, when you hear them, is all psychedelic experiences are interesting, but they're interesting in the same way it's interesting when you hear someone's dream. It's cool to listen to it, but for whatever reason, it's like not that exciting. But ayahuasca, whenever I hear you or folks talk about it, it's fascinating the way that the symbols that it's using to communicate these ideas. Totally. And it's so interesting how it seems so similar across the board.
Yeah.
What you were talking about, the shaman seeing the demon scamper out of the hut. Is it a hut you're in?
Yeah, maloka they call it.
Scamper out of the maloka. It's like everyone's tuning into this very similar frequency.
Yeah.
Whereas other psychedelics, who knows? People are having kind of, sure. dreamlike experiences, that there are similarities, but nothing like this.
Yeah, you have these big sharing circles at the end, you know, and it talks about the experience. And you never hear something in the sharing circle where you're like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. You know,
right.
like we had 20 people in there all talking about it, and you're arriving at, you know, similar truths in different ways, you know. And so the consistency there, which is why these shamans really believe that anything that's true can be reliably gotten to by every individual. So they don't talk about stuff. They don't tell you what the world is like. They just provide a clean environment for you to find it out for yourself, because they have impeccable faith that you will come to the truth yourself. Because time and time and time again, these same truths are reinforced by the experience of the individual in myriad different ways, but it's always the same truth. And the other thing about it that's separate is I have dreams all the time. But these experiences that I have seem more clever than even I could ever imagine if I was sitting down to write something really clever. Like, I was talking to the spirit of mosquitoes, because there's a lot of mosquitoes down in the Amazon. And I was like, mosquitoes, like, what the hell, man? And the mosquitoes are like, what the hell to you? You know, we're just nature's wealth distribution, man. We're just the taxes. All you meat sacks have so much blood, you're rolling around. We're just taking a little bit, and then other animals eat us, and we feed the other animals. It's just like taxes, bro. Like, settle down. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, yeah, but what about malaria? And mosquitoes are like, what about malaria? We don't like fucking malaria either. Like, why are you blaming us for that shit? That's a virus.
Yeah.
And like, we don't want that parasite. It's not our fault. Talk to the malaria over mine.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to talk to the malaria over mine. I don't want to talk to that. But that encounter, like, I just really don't think I'm clever enough to think of that on my own. But with the ayahuasca, which is why it makes it seem like it's something else you're communicating. If that's all in your head, at the very least, it's unlocking some highest potential for the creativity of your brain. Otherwise, you actually are interfacing with spirit. Either way, it's doing something pretty remarkable.
Well, this seems to go back to what you were saying, that the shamans told you about how they don't see a differentiation between
exactly
energy states in the mind or energy states in the world. They're both living entities, which corresponds to Carl Jung's idea of the neurosis, which is the behavior. You know, most of us have a behavior pattern that we do. For example, I like to eat cookies at night. So, and I don't, I want.
Is it you or the worms in your stomach?
Stomach worms. There's a lot of different ways to talk about the worms in the stomach.
Yeah.
And people have come up with a bunch of different names. Jung's way to talk about the worms in the stomach was that a piece. So here you are, the crystal ball, top of the Empire State Building. That's the human, that's the human self, a semi-unified personality that has different flavors, so to speak. So that's why sometimes people, when you're grumpy, people are like, here you are, I know what you're like when you're grumpy. And that's a different Aubrey than the Aubrey when he's feeling completely in love with someone. These are almost the, but still, it's your person with all these different flavorings in it. So Jung said that sometimes a piece of this whole thing breaks off, an unacceptable aspect of yourself that you can't embrace, you're so ashamed of it, breaks off. And that piece, because it's composed in the same way that a photon comes from the sun, it's the energy of the sun, but it's not the sun. In the same way, inside of you, this broken off little piece gains its own sentience and gains its own personality and begins to evolve and develop inside of you. And now you have a neurosis, a fragmented portion of your personality that's taken on its own life, like an AI, like some kind of artificial intelligence, Grand Theft Auto character wandering around inside the depths of your mind. And so it's the absorption of that back into the whole, which creates mental health, so to speak. But it's still the same idea, which is here there are living beings inside of you. The little broken off fragments of yourself are just as alive as you are. And those are spirits or demons or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And maybe ayahuasca is giving you the chance to have conversations with them. You know, maybe
it shows you them.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, so I've talked a little bit about the first session and the fourth session. The second and third session was about tracking. And I didn't have the terminology, but it's a neurosis. It's a neurosis of me that I call the watcher. And the watcher developed from me from childhood. We don't need to go into all that. But it's a part of me that's constantly watching what I'm doing and providing feedback, judging. Was this good? How is this going to be perceived? Blah, blah, blah. And so it's this fragmented part of myself that seems out of my control. And ayahuasca gives you the opportunity to visualize it in a variety of different ways. And I spent... This is really, you know, really interesting. I spent both of those sessions tracking it, hunting it, trying to kill it. Ayahuasca would give me a bow and an arrow, and I would shoot it and visualize it. And I was trying to kill this thing, expel this part of me, and I failed. And I failed throughout the whole thing. And that actually really weighed on me after I finished with the ayahuasca. And actually, it took until I was in Sedona by myself meditating by the creek that I decided, wait a minute, I've spent all this time trying to kill this thing that I don't like about myself. Instead, I need to welcome it back in.
Ah.
Like I need to say, okay, I accept that you're a part of me, you know, come back in. I'm, you know, and draw that back into me. And while it hasn't been like a perfect fix, that has been by far the best strategy that I've used is just to draw that back in and say, okay, you are a part of me.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You try to expel, but really bring that back in. Be okay with that being a part of you.
That is the answer. And it is so difficult to do that sometimes. You know, a watcher is nice, but there's so many other facets of the self that are just being complete dicks.
Totally.
And anyone who's being a complete dick is being a complete dick 99.9% of the time, because they're suffering.
Yeah.
Whenever you're around someone who's being an asshole, it's not because they're bad or evil. They're in pain. Mm-hmm. They're in fucking pain. Like, you know, like my dad, I remember once he slammed his finger in a door and like I tried to talk to him and he's like, get away from me! You know, because yeah, he's in such pain. And an animal, when you get around an animal that's in pain and you try to touch it, it will bite you. Mm-hmm. Not because it's like, it's just in pain. It's freaking out. So if we do believe that there are fragmental portions of the self that are controlled or puppeteered by the worms in our stomach, then it's safe to say that the ones that are misbehaving, if as above, so below, if they are exactly like us, or if in, like in the book of Genesis, as God says, or it says, man was made in the image of the creator. Mm-hmm. In the image of the creator was he made. Really trippy idea. But in the same way, if inside your mind, these various holograms of yourself are like you, then you can imagine that in the same way that when you're being a dick and you're in pain, there are little pieces of yourself that are in pain. And so because they're in pain, they deserve empathy and compassion. And so when the next time you find yourself being an asshole, if you really look at it, you're, why you're in that behavior pattern.
It's pain.
It's pain. And you're there for a reason. You're there because you had some fucking tough shit happen to you like we all did.
Yeah. And then, you know, accepting those parts as part of yourself. You know what actually helped me with that is because there's another, you know, if you talk about these little neurotic elements, you know, there's a part that occasionally creeps up when I see something really pretty. It'll be like this little voice like, I wonder what it'd be like to smash it. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Like the kid who stomps a sandcastle, or, you know, like I see something really delicate and I'm like, what would it look like if that break? And that voice horrifies me because I love art and I love beautiful things. What the fuck is that thing that's like saying, I wonder what it'd be like to smash it?
I wonder what it'd be like to punch that old lady in the face.
Yeah. This weird thing. And so I was listening to, you know, I was listening to Rupert Sheldrake talk about the field of morphic resonance, you know, like that quantum field that is all of collective man, right? And we are all that. We are the, you know, the person who beats his wife. We are the person who loves faithfully and cares for someone for the rest of their life. We are all men that have ever existed, and that is a part of us. You know,
right.
So that point, that psychopath that does punch a lady in the face or smash a beautiful piece of art, the person who tried to deface the Mona Lisa, that's part of the morphic field of man. And so that we occasionally have those voices, we can forgive that as part of ourselves. That's part of being, you know, this archetype, this existence. But it's our choice as to what actions we take and what path we take. We have that ability for free will. But just accepting the fact that, okay, it's cool if that voice is a part of me. It's a part of man itself. You know, why am I trying to be so distinct from the whole quantum field of man in the entirety?
Right.
You know, why do I have to be so much better and more special than everything it is? My choice is enough, you know? And then so that kind of bringing that in holistically has also been, you know, some of the teaching that it didn't come during the ayahuasca session. This came months later, you know, and it took me through. Well, as I was figuring this shit out, you know, it's another thing about these medicine journeys. It took me to some dark places in those months as I was figuring things out. It's almost like it got worse before now it's starting to get better because I was still, it broke me down so much and it built me up just a little bit and then left me to figure the rest of this shit out.
Right. You know?
And so as I've been doing that, it's still this process of discovering and understanding and learning from it, which is why, you know, it's going to be a while before I go down and do more medicine. You know, I still have to build back up from the lessons of this one.
Right. Yeah. No, that happens to, it's a funny thing. Like, even when I go to a meditation retreat and come back, there's just this sense of like, what the fuck? What is happening? Because anything that breaks you down, and then you have to go back into the marketplace. You have to go back into society and the crazy bizarre that is America, and suddenly you're there, but with this new realization that comes from an environment where everything's organic life shooting up out of the earth, or everything's made very close to nature, which is, you know, huts, and it's that's what we came from. So you're getting this information that seems to be related to an environment like that, and here we are in an environment of modernity and synthetic everything, surrounded by synthetic representations of nature. So it's tough, man. It really is tough. And there's no, also you're dealing with a kind of experience that not everyone's having right now, though it is very popular. There's not a shitload of people you can connect to who can be like, well, here's what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, if there was a, if there somehow.
Except for you, which is helping me figure all this shit out as I tell you what's going on. I just need to come visit you and hang next time. First stop. This might save me a few months here.
Oh, man. You know, yeah, that's cool. It is cool to it's kind of like, you know, Rogan. He doesn't know he's a Buddhist, but he's kind of a Buddhist. And he's got, you know, Buddha statues everywhere. And like, but his contact with Buddhism is like, he doesn't spend a lot of time reading about Buddhism. It's just, but he's already there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's so cool to hear somebody who's like there minus the maps, as they're called, for the terrain, which is what you need. It's just some maps for the terrain. It's so comforting to have maps. I remember when I was, you know, younger and getting blasted on LSD and like laying in bed, staring up at the ceiling, looking at what now I know is, you know, Tibetan Buddhist mandalas and seeing this like language around them, which was clearly Tibetan. Now I know that just from looking at them and stuff. But then I didn't really know what I was looking at, but I was looking at some kind of archetypical structure that is either in our mind and we project into the universe when we're hallucinating, or is in the universe and it's projected into our mind when we open ourselves up. Doesn't matter. Either way, it's beautiful and incredible. But it's nice. It would have been nice to have the maps to know, oh, okay, here's what. But maybe that's bad. Maybe the maps are fucked up, man.
No, well, the one person who went down there who is really well-versed in this and is my friend Corey. And he's done a lot of the similar reading that you have. And he went really, really deep with the ayahuasca and had some incredible experiences. But he described the source code of creation as millions of little mandalas. And so it's funny that, you know, you're talking about the same thing, but she's like, that is the language of creation, this river of mandalas.
Wow.
And like, that's the matrix. Like, that's the zeros and ones. It's this river of mandalas.
Whoa, that's pretty cool, man. Yeah. That's pretty badass. The other cool thing about having contact with ayahuasca is that it seems to have put you on a path that you'll never get off of. That once you come in contact with it, you're not going back now. Like, there's no way you could go back to the way you were, in the same way once you've woken up. And it doesn't matter what dream you're having. If you try to have it again, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't have the dream again.
Yeah.
You can have. You can almost make yourself get back into it, but you can't.
Right.
I think it's a good thing, but is it preferable maybe to just be like driving around in your car, listening to Justin Bieber? I believe everything the government does is right. And I think that, you know, I don't even think about that shit anyway. Don't get deep, dude. Bro, are you getting deep right now? I just don't like talking like that. Even though is being just like that a kind of shallow?
That's a philosopher's question as old as any, right? I mean, that's Matrix 1.
Yeah.
You know, that's, do you want to know the reality or do you not want to know the reality?
What is it? Green pill, red? What is the pill?
Red pill, blue pill.
Right.
You know, there's a part of that. But I think there's a purity of experience in the real that when you taste it, you know the flavor is different than any of the bullshit you've had before.
Right.
And that makes it worth it. It doesn't mean that it's not harder to... It expands the spectrum of possibility. I think it opens up occasionally potentially deeper suffering because it's real. It's like this protective, you know, neoprene Tupperware layer that's keeping you in a certain range, you know, is removed. And then you're exposed to the air, the elements. And that can either bring out the greatest bliss and ecstasy, or it can bring, you know, deep suffering. But it inherently comes with more work. But I think the possibilities are a lot higher. So to me, it's worth it.
It is worth it. And it doesn't matter even if you don't think it's worth it. It's just there's no going back. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I wanted to talk about is you were mentioning the idea that when you are grumpy or shitty or happy or whatever, you're sort of tuning into the a frequency of human experience that is in the universe and sort of is moving through your body, or you're channeling it through your body depending on what actions you've been taking or how much you're allowing yourself to move in one direction or the other. So what I really love about that idea is that it, again, it points to the emptiness of the self. It says that when you're angry, you're not really experiencing anger. You've tuned into a vibration of anger that exists in the universe. Then that makes me think that when you've tuned into that angry vibration or lonely vibration or dark vibration, that if you can heal it or transform it alchemically into a higher state or tune into a different frequency, if you shift the frequency, maybe you're literally healing that part of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. That part of the spectrum, the next time it rushes into another person, won't be quite as difficult or awful. And so if enough people were able to transform that darkness or that frequency, the bandwidth itself or whatever you call it, it would change. Yeah. And maybe it would stop. It would not exist in the same way.
To use Sheldrake's terminology, you're altering the quantum field for possibilities for man. You're changing that ever so slightly when you do something like that. And I think you hear these stories of the monks who are up meditating up on, some mountain somewhere, and they're doing that to send out a certain frequency for mankind, for the world. And I'm always like, what the fuck are you doing? Get down, start talking to people, help some people. But as I kind of understand that, connection beyond actual touch and communication, I understand what they're doing. They're providing that frequency of consciousness so that it is possible, for humans to experience that, to tap into that, because it becomes part of our realm of possibilities as long as they're holding that frequency and enough, with enough merit.
Yeah, that is beautiful. That's beautiful, man. We're kind of like the water filters of time that are trying to remove the flavors of suffering out mm-hmm. of existence itself or transform it into a... And that's possible. It doesn't I don't think suffering is a necessary component.
It's not. Pain is, but not suffering. Pain is... There's a beauty in pure pain.
Sure.
And there's a... And I'm not just talking about like hitting your knee with a hammer. I'm just talking about that deep heartbreak and longing when a lover is gone. And there's some poetic beauty in all of that. And that'll never be removed. But the suffering is the resistance towards that pain.
Right.
It's the not embracing of it. It's the fighting against it. It's the fear of it. That's what suffering is.
Right.
And there's no need for suffering. Pain will always exist, but acceptance of that pain removes suffering.
Oh, man. Yeah. Do you meditate?
I do.
I got to start meditating. Every time, that makes me just think, shit, man, I got to start meditating. Because meditation is showing you where your resistance is at. It's showing you the pain that you're feeling. And then if you jump into this crazy ayahuasca idea that you're literally converting of energy in the universe, not just in yourself, that when you're making yourself happy, you're cleansing that part mm-hmm. of the universe that it's going to make many other parts of the universe happy, mm-hmm. then that's why you fight. Now you have the reason for the battle.
Yeah.
Because it's not something about just helping yourself or the idea that if I can make myself a more loving or empathetic or beneficial presence in the universe, that doesn't seem enough because the world seems so out of whack that just even me getting better isn't going to help anything.
Yeah.
But if you look at the idea of like, no, you don't get it, that you're literally cleansing a part of the universe that other people are going to tune into. And if enough of us start doing that, holy shit, now we've got the thing that the hippies have always raved about. And before the hippies, any religion, now you're talking about the second coming or mm-hmm. the Age of Aquarius or mm-hmm. the... Earth becoming a type A civilization, according to that mm-hmm. cosmologist who says that that's when the first step in becoming a class one. I can't remember anyway. The first step in a real civilization is all of us recognize that we're earthlings.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Have you read the book The Fifth Sacred Thing by chance?
No.
That's an amazing book. It's a clash between a utopian society and a dystopian society and it's kind of a post-apocalyptic future. And we've heard that script before. But the way that she kind of outlines it is the most masterful way I've ever seen it done. I mean, really describing what that utopian, that class A civilization could look like. It's set in San Francisco. And really describing what that could look like and what the extreme of dystopia that could exist if we don't fix it, you know, in that clash. And they actually come in confrontation in the book. But really, really cool for anybody interested in that. Like, what if you're wondering yourself, all right, what does that civilization look like? What does it look like when consciousness has reached that heightened level and the society comes together in that way? She puts it down, and, you know, almost nothing in that book, you're like, oh, that doesn't make any sense. Like, that's it. Like, cool. That's the fucking blueprint.
The blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, because the other thing about what ayahuasca seems to teach you is it's not giving you the impression that there isn't work to be done. And some people Mm-mm. are just like, God is perfect. Everything's going to be fine. I don't have to worry about anything because God's taking care of the whole business. I'm just going to pray and do what I need to do. But the whole thing's going to be destroyed anyway. So that's one version. Another version, I just had Graham Hancock on. His viewpoint is, no, there is a struggle happening right now. A real struggle between one paradigm and another paradigm. And this struggle is being influenced by extra-dimensional beings. This is the Gnostic idea he was expressing. Mm-hmm. And our job here is to fight this great struggle, this revolution. It's a revolution. But the way the revolutionists fought is not using the tactics of the paradigm that we're trying to shift, which is to kill and destroy and cut and blow up. It's we can't use those tactics because then we become the paradigm. And then that paradigm wins. And that's part of its tricks, is that it invites you to use its tactics to fight itself. And then in that moment, you become the thing. So God damn it. The way you have to fight it is by amplifying love and reducing fear, right? That's the first revolution.
Welcoming it, you know, embracing it. Yeah, embracing it with love until it sees that vibration and transmutes itself. Because if you come with resistance, and that's, you know, it's almost like you've read the book, and I don't want to, you know, spoil too much, but that's the ultimately the society, you know, you got the tanks rolling down the hill, and there's factions in this group. This one faction says, we got to fight, we got to guerrilla tactics, we got to bomb them, you know, pick them off as they come in. But ultimately the society, the council decides, no, we got to go up to them nonviolently and say, there's a place for you set at our table. You know, there's a place for you set at our table.
Yeah.
And that's the way that you meet that resistance.
That is it. And it's powerful, man. It's mm-hmm. super powerful. Nonviolence is so incredibly potent because it's a whole new way of dealing with conflict especially in the age of the internet.
Yeah.
Nonviolence, man. If you look at when the cops sprayed those, remember back when everyone was doing Occupy Wall Street and the mm-hmm. cops sprayed those students sitting there?
Mm-hmm.
And the potency of seeing a guy in jackboots spraying poison into college students' faces, that was a giant, that was a million times more powerful in the effect it had in the world than him spraying them. Because he just wanted them off the sidewalk.
And if they would have lashed out and like pulled a stick out and tried to hit the cop after that, it would have been meaningless.
Meaningless. Yeah, right. That's it. It's a new form of martial arts, or it's a new paradigm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so many people are, and I know, I understand, because I get like that sometimes myself, but so many people, you turn on the news or you look at the world and you feel helpless. Voting doesn't work. Same president every 4 years, regardless of what body they're wearing. It doesn't matter. The military industrial complex is going to continue to wage war all over the world and control our government so that control the politicians, because there's so much money, and we've gotten to the point where it seems like that's mostly what people care about. And even if they think that they don't care about money, they're just building up their own ego. And you look out in the world and you see it and you're like, fuck, I can't do anything. Mm-hmm. It's done. There's no thing I could do. I'm going to give up. But then when you realize that actually what you can do is convert the tiny little part of the thing, which you are, shift that frequency so that you start radiating a thing that doesn't make sense in a paradigm where despair is the only, is all there is. Because people see someone like the energy you put out, man. Whenever you, it's like, what the fuck are you? What are you, man? You know, like when you get around people who are glowing in the midst of this ridiculous game people are playing, being fueled by a ghost story, pumped in their brains by massive corporations trying to sell cars, when you get around someone who's not tensed up and freaked out, who's glowing and peaceful and calm, that's almost all it takes. In that moment, when you're around someone like that, you're like, oh, I'm fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine. And so theoretically, if there was more of more Aubrey Marcuses out there.
There are. And then there's hundreds of thousands that are coming about. And it feels like, you know, that's still a minority, I think, but it's this growing minority. There's that tipping point. I think there's a book, it's something about monkeys, you know, the 99th yeah. monkey or something like that, where like it takes a certain amount of monkeys before that idea is so powerful in that field of morphic resonance, in that field of the collective, that all the monkeys start doing it. You know what
right.
I mean? And we're approaching that tipping point. And every different little person you turn on, everybody who's, you know, doesn't have these beliefs that you bring in, hey, why don't you come listen to this podcast with me? We'll drink some beers and you're just planting these seeds and these ideas of consciousness in their mind. Every little bit of that you can do helps. Because that top structure is completely, this is what gives me a lot of hope actually, is that top structure is completely spineless. They are hungry for power above all else and hungry for that position. So if the people demand that in order to be in that position, you have to act in a certain way, in a certain conscious way, they will act that way, you know, because they don't
right.
have any actual, you know, bones in their body that want to do anything for their own good, you know, anything
right.
of their own idea. They're just there to kind of read the tea leaves and go by what everybody wants. So if we demand enough, the top structure will change. It'll be resistant. You know, there's some forces that are nepotistic, you know, positions and forces that will put up a fight. But ultimately, if we get the collective to be thinking the same way, the top will change.
And it's got to start with each little particle, each person. See, that's the thing, man, is it's like the top will change. The top will definitely change. But first, you got to change your top.
Yeah,
that's the thing. You have the government running your life, the combination of habituations and accidental intentions that's driving your boat in the direction of whatever catastrophe you find yourself experiencing over and over again. If you can convert that and realize that when you are doing that work, you're not doing a kind of indulgent work that's just selfish and based on focusing on the self. You're literally converting one pixel in the biomass of humanity into what into what the next thing humans are going to be will be. And you have to do it yourself. And if you just
totally.
Focus on that work, then that will be enough.
It's true.
And in the process of focusing on that work, you might have ideas
mm-hmm.
about how to change the top of things. And you might want to get into politics. And you might want to start becoming more organized and doing direct action, which is amazing. But don't start doing that stuff first. Start on the work on the self and then see what impulses come from that practice.
Totally. Yeah, that's it. Because when you're resonating with that, that's when the best ideas are going to come. And that's when you don't even need to say anything to anybody. Your mere presence will start to alter the fields of those people around you. They'll just catch a whiff of it. Like, what the fuck is
yeah.
that? You know?
Yeah.
And that'll really start to make changes. And as you said, of course, you start to be one of those monkeys in that study where, you know, you're reaching critical mass. The higher frequency you can get, the more that becomes available for everybody, whether they're intentionally tapping into it or not.
Right. Because they won't even know.
They won't even know.
Sometimes they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so cool. Wow, man. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
You're welcome, brother.
What a fantastic conversation. Very inspirational. Just what I needed. Thank you, Aubrey.
You're welcome. And I have a gift for you, man. This is a piece of ayahuasca I got from the Shipibo people down in the jungle. So
wow.
that'll tide you over until you're ready to go down there and see it yourself.
Do I just eat it? I'm just kidding. It's like, you guys can't see it. It looks like it's wood.
Yeah,
not eat. It's a
wood
vine.
With a little shellac on it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, brother.
Put on my puja table.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. And where can people find you? I got so like hypnotized by our conversation. I forgot to do. How can people connect? What's coming up for you? Or how can people?
Well, I have a documentary out that's on the medicine Huachuma. And that's also, I did that down in Peru. And, you know, I've told that story before. Really powerful heart-opening medicine from the San Pedro cactus that traces back 3,000 years. So definitely check out that documentary if you're interested in any of this plant medicine work. You can get to that at aubreymark.us, kind of a cutesy little domain, but you can follow it through that. And then, you know, yeah, I got a new blog coming up at aubreymarcus.com where I'm going to be aggregating everything.
Cool.
Twitter is still at warriorpoetus because some fake 14-year-old emo person is holding on to Aubrey Marcus indefinitely. So
why?
I'm fighting that fight. I don't know. He's never even sent a tweet. but we're working on that. So, but it's at warriorpoetus for now.
And all those links are going to be at duncantrussell.com on the comment section of this podcast if you're driving or something and can't get to a computer right away. Aubrey, thank you so much.
You're welcome, brother. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Aubrey Marcus. You can go check him out at warriorpoet.us. I'll have all the links that he mentioned located at duncantrussell.com. And big thanks to squarespace.com for sponsoring this episode. Please go to squarespace.com. Give them a shot. They're good people. If you've been thinking about building a website, don't put it off anymore. Go to squarespace.com, sign up for a trial membership, put in offer code Duncan, and try the service out. Manifest your dreams into the flesh of the internet for Halloween. Give it a shot. And give us a nice rating on iTunes if you like the podcast. Bookmark us on Amazon and have a wonderful, beautiful Halloween where it is my true hope that you connect with or channel a super intelligent, higher dimensional entity that leads you in the direction of love, life, and orgasms. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. I'll see you next time. Hare Krishna.